We're recording this in the bowels of the Theatre Museum. If what we are about to say causes offence, we may never make it above ground again. But let's be brave. Theatre of Blood, which has just opened in the Littleton Theatre, is based on the 70s film of the same name, starring Vincent Price as a vengeful Shakespearean actor who kills off, in appropriate fashion, all those who've given him bad notices. In its latest grisly incarnation, set in a deserted, bedraggled but gilded theatre, complete with red velvet tabs, like a sinister full-size Pollock's toy theatre, Jim Broadbent plays the disappointed Ham, Edward Lionheart, and Rachel Sterling is his daughter Miranda. Lee Simpson and Phelan McDermott of Improbable Theatre have imported references to the National Theatre building, still unfinished in 1973, into their version. The basic premise remains the same, with one critic dying on the Ides of March in the manner of Julius Caesar, another sizzling under a hairdryer in a modern parallel to Joan of Arc from Henry VI, and a third tucking into a delicious dish of his pet poodles, his babies, a la Titus Andronicus. There's a bit of an argument about actor managers being replaced by clever clogs Oxbridge directors, but there isn't anything too serious here. At least we hope not. Theatre Voice's esteemed editor Dominic Cavendish is quoted in the programme, making unflattering remarks about Improbable. If this discussion ends abruptly, it may be because his headset has been laced with poison in the manner of Hamlet's father's demise. With me to discuss Theatre of Blood for Theatre Voice are Jane Edwards, theatre editor of Time Out, Charles Spencer, the chief theatre critic of the Daily Telegraph, and Mark Shenton of the Sunday Express. Is this so referential as to be an in-joke which is not going to be much use to anybody else? Jane, what did you think?
Well, I think there's a danger of that. I mean, they don't relate the critics to the critics today, so it's not quite such an in-joke that it might have been. I've followed Improbable for quite a few years now, and you get used to the sort of the high points and the low points, and kind of always rather nervous that they're going to completely fall apart and then they'll pull something out of the hat. Here it is very hit and miss, and probably more misses than hits. My main problem, actually, Jim Broadbent's an actor I hugely admire, but I actually think he was miscast here. What we've got is this old actor manager who's been usurped by, because this is set in the early 70s, by the building of the new National, Peter Hall replacing Laurence Olivier is the subtext. But we get these massive gobbets of Shakespeare in that sort of sing-song voice, you know, and you can't follow what's being said. He might as well not be talking. And quite unlike, surprisingly, Vincent Price in the film, who actually manages to bring a certain sort of poignancy to it, and you feel that there is this tradition is moving away. Broadbent is neither terribly funny nor ever very moving.
We recently had a portrait of that kind of acting in The Dresser, didn't we? The Don Wolford story, which I thought was somewhat more effective for that. But one of the things I was struck by in the programme, Phelan McDermott talks about in the play being about the idea of theatre critics being trapped in a play they can't get out of. And that made me actually think of Purple Rose of Cairo, that brilliant Woody Allen film in which the actors can't escape the film they're in because one of the actors walks off screen and they can't carry on, finish it until he comes back. And there was that same sense that we were trapped in this theatre. God knows we'd all know that feeling totally too well, where you just can't escape. But I also, likewise, afterwards, I couldn't help but look over my shoulder as I walked home via the cut and thought, is Kevin Spacey going to be there with a dagger? After all the recent things we've said about him, not least here on Theatre Voice.
I think it's a fun evening, but it's certainly not a great evening. It has to be said that the film isn't much cop. I mean, it's an enjoyably camp, funny film. But actually, the only thing that's really enjoyable on the stage version, I think, is the really gory murders, which are done with terrific elan. And, you know, you get the Guardian woman from The Guardian impaled on all these spears and actually just sort of suspended on spears. The hairdryer, I think, is a great scene.
That's a great trick when she disappears.
Great trick, yes. Don't say what happened.
Yeah, okay.
And the poodle cannibal cannibalism is fantastic. I really enjoyed all that, but I thought the rest of it was pretty thin. I think one of the most disappointing things was actually we've just had a lunch at the Critics Circle, and actually they're a really odd and interesting bunch of people, and all the critics here were so one-dimensional, and they might well have stepped straight out of an Agatha Christie novel in the sort of complete flatness of the characterisation. Each one's got one quirk and nothing else, and the plot of course is shamelessly based on Ten Little Niggers, with people being bumped off one by one, and it has got that feel of an Agatha Christie, and Agatha Christie is pretty deadly by and large, and there were large chunks of this which simply weren't funny enough, I think.
Although actually there was an Agatha Christie revival on the way in the Agatha Christie estate are trying to get all the plays revived again.
I know.
Yes, I think it was slightly deliberate that the critics were Agatha Christie types, but I thought there were some quite good jokes there, and they said, well, if this was an Agatha Christie, one of us would be the murderer, and the guy who was drank in order to forget the horrors of sitting in the theatre.
Yes, that rang a bell with me.
So I quite enjoyed all that, and I agree that the blood was fantastic, and the spurting blood, that was
the choice of deaths, the means of
yes,
it was basically,
and
I
it
mean,
looked fantastic.
It did look fantastic. Yeah. I thought that sort of blasted theatre set was wonderful.
Yes, by Ray Smith.
Yeah, really good set by Ray Smith, and it was just really a sort of I thought it was sort of the National letting its hair down a bit, and as is so often the case in these circumstances, it was just a little bit self-indulgent. But there's enough there to enjoy. Except I do think we had a couple of young guys in our office who went to a preview, and who, like so many young people, don't give a toss about the theatre, and they walked out at the interval. They just could not see the point of it. And I think you do need to be a bit of either a lover yourself or an absolute theatre fanatic to really enjoy
the show. It helps to know a bit about Shakespeare,
and it helps to know about Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm. Well, to get the gags about
to get the gags,
kills,
yeah,
the killing.
Yeah.
Well, it has to have been. I mean, the most significant night has to have been the press night, doesn't
exactly.
it? Because there were all the critics there, and there were a lot of actors there,
yes,
who were supporting Lionheart along the way. And yes, yet, even on that night, you know, it was a bit uneven, and there were bits where people were cheering, and then it would go quite flat.
I mean, all the cheering did make me think that we're almost as popular as traffic wardens and wheel clampers, aren't we?
I think the other thing is, I didn't feel that this thing, there was this attempt at the end to import this seriousness about, you know, the end of the actor manager and the coming of the Oxbridge generation, and then they sort of shone the lights on the sort of concrete walls of the Littleton to show how it had changed and how different it was from the old style proscenium theatres. I thought that was dreadfully laboured. I mean, come on, this is just meant to be, a blood fest and lots of laughs. And I just thought the points they made about it was pretty banal.
It was a bit laboured, but on the other hand, it was the time, you know, it was quite a significant discovery for them when they realised that the film was made at the point at which the National was being made. There was a change.
I think it was one of those things where the research, they'd had this idea and they suddenly thought, oh, we can give it a sort of important theme, but I don't think it actually amounts to a hill of beans, as they say.
Do you think it's a sign of the National's confidence about what it's doing the rest of the time, that it can laugh at itself?
Well, it's kind of a time for a summer panto, as Charlie said. Mm. But also the other thing I reminded me of in that very same theatre, the Littleton, was Sweeney Todd, with all the bloodletting that happens in that, but without any of the good tunes. So that was certainly missing.
But you've mentioned Jim Broadbent, who fell short for most people, perhaps, here. What about Rachel Sterling?
Well,
it sounded exactly like her mother.
Well, and looked just like her. It was just uncanny. And she looked Diana Rigg looked in The Avengers, didn't she? And since I was absolutely besotted with Diana Rigg in The Avengers, it was a pleasure to see her.
It wasn't quite a wasted evening.
She sounds and looks the spitting image of her mother.
It's a wonderful collection of bad wigs in this show.
Yes.
She had a classic,
yes, she certainly did. But when she was wearing that, you know, the hair a la Diana Rigg, the sort of long brown look, absolutely, it was a very peculiar feeling, wasn't it? It was like seeing that added, I thought, a dimension to the play that wasn't actually in the writing at all. A really spooky quality, you know. It was like Diana Rigg had gone back 30 years.
I didn't feel actually talking about spookiness, I could have done with a bit more more spook from the tramps. I think they didn't quite pull off the atmosphere.
They were very horrid in the movie, weren't they?
Yes.
That extraordinary scene on the river, and they are like zombies, and they're all swigging their purple meths, and they didn't come over at all. No.
Well, while we had Dinah Rigg's daughter on stage, I had Robert Morley's son, who played the Betty Bourne character, Michael Merridew, sitting behind me, Sheridan. So that was a slightly spooky thing for me.
It always is with Sheridan sitting behind you, though, isn't it?
but I did think that Betty Bourne was actually a triumph.
Oh, I agree. I love Betty Bourne. Fabulous. Yeah.
Yes. So he was terrific, wasn't it? And actually, if it had all
some
had
good lines,
yes. If it had got more of that sort of camp edge to it, it just needed more sharpness and polish. Mm. And actually, it was the kind of thing, you know. You rather wish that it hadn't been improbable. You know, they're jolly good at homemade theatre, but actually I wanted a really slick production of this.
Yeah.
Well,
maybe it'll run in a bit as well over the summer, and that will be worth seeing again, possibly. Mm.
Would you recommend it to anyone who isn't a regular theatre goer?
No.
Not who isn't a regular theatre goer.
No. Well, on that note, assuming we all get out of here safely, thank you very much to Charles and Mark and Jane.